If you read the Mid-City Sentinel the other day, you saw my name. A byline, we call it. On a story titled, The Friend Nobody Loves. I think the idea first struck me when I attended a meeting of our community sports club. We'd gathered in a little office in the Civic Center, and after a little chatter, the meeting got down to business.
Well, fellas, if you'll give me your attention for a moment, we'll talk about the main matter in hand. Our junior hockey team has won the provincial title, and some of us think they ought to go on and try their strength in the Dominion playoff. As you know, that means money. Now, a lot of the lads can't afford to pay their own way, and the gate receipts haven't begun to cover expenses.
Well, how much money would be needed?
Well, we figured to be on the safe side, it would take about $1,200.
Well, why not start a public subscription? Put an appeal on the radio. That's how we were able to raise the money for the curling rink.
Well, we plan to do that, and the radio station has already offered its facilities. However, it has been suggested that we also form a canvassing committee and go after the businessmen individually.
Give me the mill. I'll get plenty out of them. I'll go up there and talk turkey to the old man.
Give me Brown's store. I'll wangle $100 out of them easily.
Say, be sure and put Blank's Hardware on my list. I hooked him plenty for that other trip we gave the kids. I just walk in there and say, here's what we've got you down for, I tell them.
As you might guess, the kids got away all right. The radio station broadcast the playoffs. The newspaper covered it in every detail. And our Mid-City Junior Hockey kids were heroes. But I wondered afterwards about the businessmen, the fellows who paid the shot. Did anyone remember to say thanks? Well, I talked to the chief about it. It seemed to me there was thinking of a story in it.
Well, you figure the members of your sports club weren't as grateful as they might have been, eh, Danny?
I don't know if all clubs are like the one I belong to, but I hope not. Those guys seem to think storekeepers are made of money.
Well, our Mid-City merchants always do contribute well to any community affairs. That's swell. I think they should contribute.
Sure. That's not what I'm getting at. It was the attitude. The idea that they're fair game and don't even need to be thanked.
Danny, in my youth, a man was mighty proud if he built up a little business. Townspeople were proud of him, too. The better service he gave, the more he grew. And everyone who knew him was proud of his success. But these days, for some reason or other, business is under pressure. Seems to be a popular pastime to heckle and criticize and complain about business.
Oh, that's a fact, Chief. I've often wondered why businessmen don't defend themselves.
Well, that's the whole point, Danny. Most businessmen are too darn busy doing things to defend themselves or explain what they're doing.
Well, it's time they started.
Now, you take John Smith, for instance. President of the Mid-City Fabricating Plant. I guess John's on every worthwhile committee in town. Red Feather, Child Welfare, Boy Scout Executive. And he heads up our Chamber of Commerce. I'll wager he hardly ever has an evening to himself. And he supports those projects financially, too. Yet when crackpots get up and lambaste our capitalist system and call businessmen robber barons and the like, people forget that they're talking about the John Smiths of Mid-City. I sometimes wonder... Yes, editor's office. Oh, yes, he's here. All right, I'll tell him. Danny Cochran's down with the flu. He wants to know if you'll cover that political rally over in the West Hall tonight. J.P. Gusty, you know.
Oh, speaking of crackpot.
That's old crack, Cochran, you'd cover it.
Oh, thank you, Chief. That was nice of you. Very nice.
What are we stopping at the West Hall for?
Well, you're about to hear a speech, Nellie, my girl.
A speech? Is that your idea of a date?
Oh, it's strictly the chief's idea, I can assure you. Come on, we'll sneak in at the back. Oh, Gusty's already underway.
He used to be bringing the host down.
He would. He's a rabble rouser from way back. Go on, squeeze him.
And I can tell you, my friends, this state of affairs cannot be allowed to go on. Someday an aroused electorate will put an end to it. I sometimes wonder how we've allowed the capitalists to hoodwink us for so long. Don't you sometimes wonder, too? What right have they to live on the fat of the land? Why should they prosper while we labor by the sweat of our brows?
He doesn't look as though he's done a day's work in his life.
Yeah, but look how they swallow everything he says.
My friends, it is time we turned the tables on these robber barons. And you can do it. You, the people, can take over all the means of production. That is the only way. And then, at long last, this nation will know the fruits of production for use and not for profit. Properly planned, properly directed, the profits of industry would then go into the hands of the people, into your hands, the hands that create it. I thank you.
Now, let's go, Nellie. Lordy, listen to that applause.
Well, he does make it sound plausible, Danny.
Plausible? Don't they ever stop to think who he means when he talks about the planners? How they'll take over the means of production and plan things for them?
Who does he mean?
John P. Dusty, of course. If he talked himself into power and got control of all the means of production, how long do you think he'd control it? Say, a good many hard, sharp, ruthless characters would soon squeeze him out. Believe me. Well, they might use him as a front, but that's all. Well, look what happened in Russia. The revolution was well meant, but look who got control. Stalin and the toughest, hardest, most ruthless little coterie of gents you ever laid eyes on. So now the Russian people are having just such a wonderful, wonderful time producing for use, but not for profit. Well, at least it's true the Russian people get no profit. Stalin's little gang does all right, though.
To eat, Danny.
Eat? Who said anything about eating?
A little girl by the name of Nellie McCoy. You know her.
I sure do. And I've seen her eat.
Tonight, I could expel myself.
Tonight, you're not going to eat. Not for a while, anyway. We've got a more exciting enterprise in store.
More exciting than a steak?
Yep. You're going to see a real, live, in-the-flesh robber baron. Scared?
Just hungry.
Oh, here we are. This is the robber's lair.
Mrs. Smith, that was a lovely lunch. I'd certainly like to know how you make that sandwich filling.
Well, that can wait, Miss McCoy. I'd like to hear more about why Gusty's speech worried Danny here. Gusty's been calling us all robbers for years.
Well, it has been an accumulation of things, as I said. And hearing Gusty lace into capitalists tonight was the final straw. I don't think you businessmen know how poorly you stand in the eyes of the public.
It's true that business is badly in need of friends, all right. We're being run down deliberately by some people, but by others, Danny, it's just ignorance.
Well, what are some of the effects of having so many enemies?
Well, business, you'll have noticed, is being hemmed in more and more by restrictions, by legislation, by red tape. It's harder than ever before in history to operate a business. The small fella particularly is having a very tough time.
Oh, would you say that business today deserves the friendship of people?
Well, think it over, Danny. First, business creates jobs for millions of men and women. Business produces and distributes goods to feed, clothe, and shelter us. Business deserves friends, I'd say, because it takes the risks of developing new frontiers. It attracts venture capital for an expanding economy and makes additional jobs for you and me and our children.
I can understand that. I closed town one time, and it made me think what happens when business folds.
That's not all, Danny. Not by a long shot. I say that business deserves friends in government.
My golly, it doesn't often find friends there.
No, but it should. Because business pays a large share of the taxes on which the government operates and pays family allowances and old age pensions. In fact, Danny, business is the only real permanent force which can raise the standard of living of Canadians. It's the backbone of social service, social welfare, defense, and security. Business should be swamped with friends.
It should be, but it's not. For one thing, fellows like you are too busy to take time out to tell what business is doing and has done.
Danny, as you know, I'm president of the Mid-City Chamber of Commerce. Our secretary, Grant Mitchell, has a recent survey on what business is doing to win friends. What I'd suggest is that you slip down and see him at the chamber office tomorrow, and he'll give you plenty of facts.
Oh, I'll do that. Grant has helped me before. And now, if Nellie's coaxed that recipe out of your wife, I guess we'll be running along.
Mr. Smith told me you'd be calling, Danny, so I've got a lot of the survey figures underlined for you.
Oh, good. You say the survey was taken in 1949?
Yes, it covered all provinces and includes a good cross-section of Canadian companies employing 10 or more people. See, this is the sort of thing we found. 80% of all companies had group insurance plans for employees. In fact, nearly all the real big companies have them. 93% of the large companies have pension plans. 50% of all companies have them. 3/4 of the companies provide benefits in case of sickness.
Well, those things are fine, Grant. But what I'm after, really, is what attitude business is taking towards the employee. I want to know why business isn't making more friends. Are they just giving workers financial benefits? Or are they also treating them like human beings, making friends of them?
Most companies are doing everything they can think of, Danny. Mind you, business has become mighty progressive in the last 10 or 20 years. They try to give the employee a lot more information. They circulate their financial statements so the employee knows how the company is doing, what profits are being made, and so on. And many companies have employee training programs to show the employees where they can get ahead and to make them feel that they're part and parcel of the organization.
Oh, that's swell. But how come, in the face of those facts, business doesn't have more friends?
Danny, it would take a long time to answer that. For one thing, the ideas of dictatorship didn't die with the dictators. The idea that government should own and run business was spread mighty cleverly in Europe. Those ideas die hard. It's part of our job here at the Chamber of Commerce to urge businessmen to take enough time to explain themselves and to win friends for their business. They deserve friends, but too often they hide their light under a bushel. In the meantime, the enemies of business are at work all the time. They sneak their propaganda into every nook and cranny. It's a sort of national pastime, a costly one. If instead labor and management could get together, forgetting past differences, and work with the common goal of producing more and better products at lower and lower prices, this country could set a world record, a record unsurpassed in all human history, in prosperity and security for everyone.
Now, that's how I came to write my feature story, The Friend Nobody Loves. I hoped it might jar the teeth of a few John Gussies and also wake up a few businessmen to the need for winning friends. Well, I figured it was a pretty fine piece of writing, so I showed it to Nellie. She read it over carefully, and I waited for her comments. She laid the article down on my desk, looked at me for a minute, and then said,
"You know, Danny, I think that sandwich bread Mrs. Smith makes is the best I ever tasted, don't you?"